Hey guys, welcome to season 9 of Interviews with the Hunting Masters podcast. I want to start off by saying thank you for all the reviews, the comments, and the questions that you guys send in. I do this to help others, and it means a lot to me that you're involved. And also, it helps me keep this podcast free and helps me keep this podcast at the top of the charts. With your help, I've been able to grow this podcast to one of the number one podcasts in big game hunting. I also want to give a big shout out to Sneak Tech Sneak Boots for being the number one sponsor of this podcast and helping me keep it free. So thank you, and let's roll into the next episode.
Well, we're on with Ryan Callahan of First Light, and just wanted to pick your brain a little bit and have you share with us, you know, one of those stories that had like a teaching moment for you, something that you know, maybe learn something about hunting a specific species or kind of change the way maybe you hunt it.
Yeah. There's one story that I think about a lot. And it happened 2-3 summers ago now, but it's amazing how many of these stories, regardless of category, are kind of the same, you know.
Yeah.
But my grandma called me up, and she was 89 at the time, or so she says, because she's been 89 for a couple of years. She said, hey, I want to learn how to fly fish. And I used to teach folks how to fly fish all the time. You know, if you're guiding fly fishing, you end up just doing a lot of instruction, right?
Right.
And she, it's very simple. If all you do is pay attention to the instructions, the right mechanics. And so I was like, oh yeah, no problem. And she lives in Billings, Montana, or outside of Billings, Montana. And it's about an 8-hour drive for me. And I said, well, when do you want to do this? Got cousins getting married this summer. I'll be up for that. She's like, this weekend.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh.
Right now.
It's an 8-hour drive. She goes, I'm 89 years old. It's like, I don't have time to wait on this stuff or it might not happen. And she's never demanding like that, right? So I zipped up there that weekend, and we went out on the Boulder River, chunk of state ground, and this lady is a cancer survivor a couple of times. She's got one lung.
Wow.
She's got an oxygen tank, and you know, real tricked out backpack deal, so
yeah,
she's highly mobile. And she's a veteran. She's a mother of 10.
Jesus.
And she's like a true matriarch, right? Like her way or the highway.
Gotcha.
And she's wants to learn how to fly fish. She's always been into fishing. So we go walking early morning, go walking down this chunk of state ground to the Boulder River. And the Boulder River is aptly named. It's like very slick and no level surfaces, and she's having a really hard time breathing. And my mom is always like, yeah, you gotta watch her because she'll adjust her oxygen when you're not looking. And sure enough, I look at, and the tank, the pressure's on 0. It's supposed to be on 6.
Right.
She's got one lung, she needs a lot of oxygen, right? And I'm like, hey, and she's doing these short breaths, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, she's like, well, I want to have more time on the river. I'm like, well, we got to get you to the river first.
Yeah, that's the part you're using the most oxygen is walking to it, not standing there.
Yeah, and so we kind of navigate the bank and kind of cross through this riparian zone, and we get to the river and get her dialed in, and the fish start rising. And it's just picture perfect. And she starts charging into the river, right? And I have to, this is my grandma, again, like matriarch, right? I have to reach out and grab her by her belt and like the top of her underpants. And, you know, kind of an awkward position to be in for a grandkid. I'm holding her in the river, and she starts making casts and doing it very, very well. Like, all of a sudden she's making 20-foot casts.
Okay.
With dry flies and good drifts. And, you know, I finally had, I'm like, you've been messing with me? Like, what? You can do this. And she said, well, Ryan, when you're my age, you just listen. Like, you said you know how to do this. She's like, I'm not going to fight it. I'm like, oh, all right. And, wish all my clients had been like you.
Right.
And, you know, we're having a great time, and she's missing fish, and she's trying to charge around the river. And that was just like this very aha moment for me as far as, you know, there's people who want to go do things and they figure out how to do it right. And make it happen. And then there's a lot of people who just sit around and bitch about not being able to do things. And when you use this lady as an example,
right.
This cancer survivor, one-lunged old lady
yeah.
on an oxygen tank, cannot be removed from this oxygen tank. If she can go out there and make this stuff happen, like, I don't think anybody's got an excuse.
Exactly. No excuses, for sure.
So, and I think about that all the time. Like, for any of my personal trips, any time where I'm like, oh, boy, there's a bull over there, but he's a long way away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, it's right there. It's so there for the taking. Right?
I seem to get that a lot with clients that'll come and they'll be like, I'm like, oh, I found your buck. He's way up there or whatever. And they're like, oh, can we find something a little bit closer? I'm like, you're paying to be here and you want this type of buck and you want this caliber, you know.
Yep.
That's where they are.
And I told you what the situation's
yeah.
like. Like,
it's,
yeah.
yeah.
And I think about that all the time too. With, you know, think about those dudes wanting to drive four-wheelers into wilderness.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, the access is there.
Yeah.
All you got to do is go use it.
Right.
And I'll be the first to tell you that a lot of my wilderness hunts, which I do a lot of, mm-hmm. I'm not very far from the track.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just another form of access. You know? So anyway, I think about grandma a lot these days. So yeah.
That's cool. I mean, it's honestly, there was like two teaching points with that. It's like you said, there's no excuses. If you want to do something, make it happen, do it. But the other one was the fact that she listened.
Yes.
Because how many times do you have somebody that's like, okay, so coos deer hunting. One of the yep. biggest things with coos deer hunting that we see is people can't find the animal in the scope.
Yes.
It's very tough to locate. It's not, if you haven't been doing it, it's not easy. But if you sit there and you listen to the instruction that we're giving you, and, you know, we set the guns up on the Phoenix shooting bags and we get them set up so that they can, you know, have a really easy time. It's already pointing in the right direction. And listen, but guys just, they want to do their own thing.
Yeah.
And they're all, they
tell me what you see in the scope. What are you looking at?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've hunted this way my whole life, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, but you never hunted, you never have.
Yeah. Thing.
And it's just like, but that's cool.
And many, many times, you know, guiding elk hunters or antelope or anything,
yeah,
it was, we'd basically burn a day.
Yeah.
Getting to know each other, right? Where it's like, okay, you're not going to listen and you want to do your own thing, yeah. So I'm just going to be quiet and follow you around the woods, and then eventually we'll meet up somewhere. figure out some middle ground and where to make it happen.
Yeah, elk hunters are, that's pretty typical. You know where I don't notice that is guys that come from the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to like, one, they don't have that the jitters because they shoot a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
They're used to drawing back their bows and shooting animals. But I feel like anybody who's ever kind of already been elk hunting on their own always comes with an opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and it's fine because I go with the mentality that I can learn something from anybody.
Yeah, which is absolutely true.
But
yeah.
At the same time, when I go, okay, I'm a guide. I've been hunting since I'm 4 years old. I'm 42 now. I've killed my fair share of stuff. I never go on a guided hunt and tell the guide what to do, ever. I'm like, this is your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
You know, this is something I've never hunted here before. You obviously make a living at this here, so you got to know something more than I do. And if I get to a point where I'm spending 4 days with the guy and I think he's an idiot, then that's a different story. But yeah
you got to give him the shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So. It is there is always something to learn from anybody, and that's why when you ask to do this, you're like, hunt masters or masters of hunting, like, I hate that. Like, the badass stuff, the masters stuff, the expert stuff, because I will never, ever, ever get to a point where I'm not learning something.
Right.
And all the variables in hunting are why I hunt. And if I get to the point where I'm like, oh, I know for a fact this is going to happen, and it becomes easy, I'm going to figure out something else to do with my time. Because that's,
or do it a different way.
Yeah.
Pick up different weapons.
Yeah. So, we were freshman year of college, you know, this buddy of mine, Kyler, and I were, doing the freshman year of college thing, having beers and hanging out at a party and talking about hunting and knowing that we were the, the biggest swinging dick hunters in the room. And this dude, Carl, from New Jersey comes up. He's like, oh, I love to hunt too. And we're like, yeah, New Jersey, whatever. And he's like, yeah, my brother and I killed 56 whitetails last year. And we're like, oh.
So the name of the show, Interviews with the Hunting Masters, that was born 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it was kind of like a different thing. Like, we only did it for the Hunting Channel. And I've wanted to change that because of that same thing that you
just
brought
up. It's a good talking point, though, too, obviously.
But the whole thing is, and it's really long, it's a much harder market. And, but when I released it to try it out, so originally it was just for the Hunting Channel. You had to be a paid member. And I only released one a month. And so when I brought it to the masses 2.5 years ago, and I put it on iTunes and all that other stuff, it was like, let me just throw it out there with some of the old episodes and see if there's any traction, if anybody really wants to listen.
Yeah.
And I did, and it had traction. So by the time I figured out that I was going to do it, I already had so much following. I was like, well, now do I change the name to Days in the Wild, which was my TV show for a long time, and the name of my outfit and service, and kind of keep everything the same. And I'm like, oh, but I've already kind of done all this, like, and so I just kept it.
The
Hunting Masters, and I mean, it's like, but honestly, I don't.
Is a strong word, but
I hate it.
I do. You know what I mean? It's like that. I've always just been wary of folks who walk around.
It comes off very
douchey, right?
It comes off like, really, like, this guy thinks he's a hunting master.
Yeah.
You know?
And what is an expert? It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, I actually hate the name. I hate it, but I'm too far down the pike now, and we're number 3 in big game hunting, so I can't change the name now.
It's no, like, I mean, I think
at least if I don't know how to do it. I mean, I'm trying to get with some guys who know internet better than I do, and social, SEO and all that stuff. If I could figure out
really
a way
fun
to do
thing.
It, yeah, all yeah. Shit that I can't stand. If I could figure out a way to do it and not lose anything, I'll probably do that.
Yeah.
So. Just make it more concise and easy and get rid of the stigma.
So. Oh, yeah, man. I mean, I've been in. It's just, it's funny. Yeah, I've always just, like, the word expert. I'm like, all right, what's that? You don't learn anything anymore? What's
exactly.
going on?
Yeah. Exactly. I know everything.
Yeah.
Cool. So, I didn't prep you for this, but share with me your most outrageous hunt, your most memorable hunt that you can think of that kind of sticks out to you.
One that I don't talk about is I was hunting for mushrooms and moose sheds, and so that's a hunt, right?
Yeah.
Is to me anyway. It's the first time I ever got charged by a grizzly bear.
Oh, geez.
And it was off Marias Pass, in between, off of Highway 2, West Glacier and East Glacier. So you're right. It's the densest population of grizz in the U.S., lower 48, anyway. Glacier National Park on the north side of the highway, Bob Marshall Wilderness on the south side of the highway.
I haven't been up there, but I know where it's at.
The Bob Complex. If you want to get picky, it's the Spotted Bear Wilderness up there. And I had my 2 yellow labs with me at the time, and very, like, love my bird dogs, right? Uh-huh. And they're very well trained. And I've been working for 2 months straight, no days off. And this was not too early for mushrooms, probably, but the place had burned. And but there should be some moose sheds around up there, because I know they winter in some of that south-facing country. And I'd gone in as far as I could on the truck, and then got stopped by snow, and then got up on this ridge and started cruising this ridge. And I was not on the peak of the ridge. I was just kind of off the side. And then eventually decided to kind of make my loop and peeled off, and it's all burned. And there's one island of green trees in there. And dropped down and was going to cut through the green trees, thinking like lichen on the trees might have some moose that hung out in there in the winter. And I see this blonde flash go ripping through the trees. And my brain goes bull elk, but the other part of my brain goes, you know, that's not a bull elk. And all of a sudden, I hear these cub grizz go ripping off, and I see them, and they're screaming bloody murder, right? And mom is right in my face, comes in and stops at 10 feet. And I was guiding fly fishing at the time, and all I could think about was, boy, if I had my fly rod, I could reach out and poke this gal. And I had a 45 on my hip, I had bear spray on my pack, and I had these two dogs. And I'm telling the dogs to sit and be calm, because I don't want them to exacerbate the situation.
Right.
Mom is sprinting the opposite way, hitting the brakes, turning around, and coming right back into where she was. And all I can do is go, whoa, and whoa, and whoa, and whoa. And it happened so fast. She charged three times and popping her jaws and everything. And the only thing I could think about was, there's more of us than her.
Right.
And her ears are up. And when she comes in and hits the brakes, she's looking at me and looking at the dog and looking at the dog.
She don't know what to do.
But her ears are up, right? Yeah. And, you know, just kind of animal behavior. It's like she's trying to figure this out and figure out if this is going to be worth it.
Right.
And for some reason, I mean, I may as well not had a gun and not had bear spray.
Right.
And I just couldn't even, there's just too much going on to even think about it. But I thought, she's trying to figure this out. There's more of us than her.
Right.
So I'm not going to drop and be placid, but I'm going to try to let her know that she shouldn't come any closer. And in the blink of an eye, it was done. And I hiked into a completely new drainage in about 30 seconds, just pure adrenaline, straight up this mountain and over the other side. And I had to stop and go, this is not home.
No.
And turn around and come back. And I ended up on the ridge that I was coming in on. And I had to hike the same direction that this sow and two cubs had taken off. And I'm walking the ridge, and the same ridge that I came in on, just 15 yards higher, there is mom's tracks and the cub's tracks and the digs and the scat and everything that is, that they were walking in the exact same time I was.
Oh God.
And I just dove off at a different time than they did. And all I could think was, had I been on top of that ridge and seen that sign, I never would have gone any further, right?
Right.
So, and you think about how many times that happens. You know, every day in the woods, probably, right?
Yeah.
It's like, if you were 10 yards off to the side, there's a big set of mountain lion tracks there or something, right? So that was an eye-opener, right? Like, the two ships passing in the night.
Yeah.
I had no interest in being in that situation whatsoever. And had I been on those tracks, I never would have been. But it was, and I did ultimately fire my firearm.
Yeah.
Once I got back on the tracks and was like, oh my God, I don't want this gal to think I'm chasing her down at this point.
Right.
So then I did shoot a couple of rounds and like, okay, just want to get back to the truck.
Keep on going.
Yes. Yeah, so that was a pretty intense one in a blink of an eye, you know.
I haven't hunted grizzly country very much, but I've never had an encounter with grizzly bear. I've ran into black bear, but usually they just turn around and run away. But this last day of season in Arizona in January, so it was a couple weeks ago, not even a week ago, a week and a half ago, I was biking in. I was hunting in a foot access only area, and I get to a spot and I stop the bike and I go to check my phone for, you know, GPS or whatever, and I look up and I see a pair of green eyes staring at me. You know, like, you know, it's a predator's eyes because they're close together in the front of the head, and I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, so I pull out my big flashlight because I got my headlamp on, and you know, and I light it up with the big flashlight. I still can't tell, so I pull my binos out and I'm looking at it. Now I can see it. I'm like, shit, it's a freaking mountain lion. It's only like 80 yards up the trail from me, just staring at me. I'm like, son of a bitch, it's a freaking mountain lion right here. And I know, so I was going to hunt a catchment, a waterhole, and we had some trail cam pictures of the mountain lion in there, and I was like, it's gotta be that cat. And that's something that's just, I think it's a female actually. I think she just walked, just kind of circled me, got downwind of me, and then I kept, you know, following her with the flashlight. I got to a certain point, finally she just turned and she just started bounding away. Just ran out of there, but I was like, shit.
Oh, and yeah, I mean, your ability to kind of freak yourself out in the woods too, like your brain's working. We did a drop camp in Idaho 10 years ago now, and real kind of arid part with a bunch of little rock spires in there. And I just kind of like to get a general plan because my plans always fall apart, right? So I'm always getting lost, which is a great way to learn an area, you know. As long as you can get yourself out of it at some point, nothing wrong with getting lost. And
displaced.
Yes.
Not lost.
So finally I get back on the ridge that I'm supposed to be on. It's like midnight. There's a full moon, so I don't have my headlamp on. And I'm cruising down this trail, and I can see this set of eyes, like this human shape and this set of eyes right on the side of the trail, I mean a long way down. And it's reflecting in the moonlight, and you know, it's real steep and taking my time and getting down this thing, and I'm getting closer and closer and closer, and I'm trying to dismiss this thing.
Right.
But it is eyes on this very human shape.
That's crazy.
And I'm legitimately like
freaking out.
Yeah, I'm like,
Sasquatch.
Boy, this is like, I'm getting to go time here. And finally get up there and flip my headlamp on, and it's this nighthawk sitting on this rock spire off the trail.
Oh, really?
And it's like, you know, because I could see the head turning, and it was one of those things where you're like, there's relief and also like severe embarrassment for yourself, right? You're God, what a sissy. Yeah, but also I love that stuff, right? Yeah. It's all the little side stories, like running around to your country and finding the horny toads. And
yeah.
I love that stuff. Yeah.
So that same morning, I thought it was gonna take me a lot longer, but I used my electric bike, so I could get there in there a lot quicker. So I got there, it was like an hour and a half before sun up, and I'm just sitting there on the top of this ridge after just seeing this lion. I'm way the heck back there. I'm like 7 miles back, and I'm like, I just kept freaking. It was super windy too, so the branches kept moving, and I was like freaking myself out that this lion's like creeping up my backside. I just, your mind plays tricks on you, and you're like, kept flipping on my headlamp. And
yes,
I'm not gonna see any deer because I'm just messing everything up right now.
Yes. Well, that's what everybody's like, how do you sleep in grizz country?
Yeah, you don't.
I'm like, you got to consign yourself to the situation. You're like, well, if it happens, it happens, but I got to sleep in order to function.
Yeah. Up in a tree.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, awesome. That's a cool story. I want to thank you for coming on.
Oh, yeah. And, thank you very much.
And sharing with that.
No, that was fun.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we have to have you on to have an actual traditional podcast one of these times.
And, oh, yeah, I'd love to do it.
Prick your brain about some of the backcountry stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I'd like to talk to you about, you know, First Light and some of your equipment and whatnot.
Oh, for sure. For sure, yeah. It's going to be the it's a really fun thing to be a part of, because every year is our best product line ever, you know. And
that's cool.
The whole office is crazy active. I have very passionate product meetings because everybody's the end user, you know. So,
right.
And it's not like singularly focused, you know. So you get a real broad spectrum out of the office. And you got guys who are just learning. And all of us are trying to expand our knowledge on different areas, you know.
Right.
It's a super fun thing to be a part of. And I think, you know, putting a bunch of so-called experts in a room is a good way to make bad products.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got to have people who are like, yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah.
And you put a bunch of experts in a room and nobody ever wants to say they don't know something, right? So I think that gives us a big advantage, is having people at different
levels.
Yeah, different levels of expertise. Yeah, so
that's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Back in the day, I did a lot of product testing, and kind of that's how I cut my teeth in the industry. I did a lot of like product development stuff for people, and I used to really enjoy that. I used to like, go back and tell you what I like, beat the shit out of something for a couple of months, and then come back and be like, you need to fix this, and that.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think there's still a. That is not dead by any means. It's just how can you... You have to have that
right.
as a pure product, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where... And that's why I tell lots of folks, I'm like, well, you need to have a sponsor that's like Chevy or Ford.
Yeah.
And then you can review hunting gear.
Exactly.
Because you can't... You know, it's... You open some of these magazines and you're like, oh, every product they reviewed is good.
Yeah.
Like, nope. Well...
I made my bones. Like I always try to give my best. Like I won't bash a company.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's just there's nothing. But I'm only going to tell you what's good about it.
Yeah.
And like I kind of all the reviews that I've done, always try to even if it's a product that I'm not sponsored by or whatever, that's better than the product I'm sponsored by, I'll say it. And like, I've been with Matthews since 2001. You know, I volunteer my time in an archery shop,
mm-hmm.
and I don't automatically go put somebody in Matthews, you know, because it might not be the best bow for that person.
Yeah.
You know, that integrity that you and I talked about this a little bit before we actually did the podcast about how the social media thing.
Yep.
Everybody's like, oh, this is the best product. And then they get a deal from somebody else, you know.
Yeah.
That's better than their current deal. Now, this is the best product.
Oh man, look at clothing, right? It's like people run so differently.
Yeah.
And you look at all the sizes and shapes of people here.
Yep.
Different fat content.
Oh yeah.
Like they're gonna operate a hell of a lot different than
styles of
I am at 7,000 feet or 2,000 feet. Right? So it's very we always put ourselves in the spot where it's like, oh, you know, this is the best.
Right.
Everything else sucks, right?
Yeah.
And I just think that's not the correct way to go about it.
There is a place for I wouldn't say everything, but there's a place for most of the stuff that's out there. Because it was designed, the person who originally came out with the idea to do it, it was solving a problem for them.
Yeah.
So that same problem that guy had that made that product might be the same, you know, that another guy has, you know.
And I think that's why, you know, we at First Light are so successful, because what we focus on the most is we just need this stuff to be versatile.
Yeah.
As large a temperature range as possible, right?
Right.
Everything that goes on the mountain's got to do more than one job well. And we're trying to not have a lot of overlap. Like, I don't want a catalog this big. I want versatile stuff. And that being said, I think we do a hell of a good job at it. But our fit is probably not going to fit every single person in this room, right? And so that's still a battle that we're always going to be fighting. Is there's going to be certain things that fit one person great, and they're going to push it on their buddy.
Right.
And they're going to be like, well, this stuff rides different, right? So, and that's like, people are always asking for boot and backpack recommendations. Like,
well, how can you recommend boots?
Yes.
I mean, I could tell you that these lasted me 3 seasons. And the tread's still on there, and they're great. And for the price, awesome. But they're going to fit you the way they fit me?
Exactly.
Definitely not.
And that is a personal item that can literally cripple you.
Oh, yeah.
Can absolutely ruin your hunt, your experience, your year.
I agree.
Same with backpacks, you know.
Yep.
So
yep.
I'm always like, well, this is what I have experience with.
Yeah.
I'm not giving you a recommendation on any of it, but because you got to make sure it fits.
Yeah. I'm actually working on a backpack right now.
Really?
Yeah. And it's kind of, again, born out of necessity. Like, the backpack concept. So is that it adjusts? Most people have the adjusting, torso strap, but the lumbar doesn't adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Or, so my backpack is going to have all that, adjustability so that it can fit more people. It's not going to fit everybody.
Yes.
But it'll fit more people. And it's try to make it as versatile, like you're saying. Like, I've got that idea.
And it is, like, you're seeing some of these companies do a better and better job with that. Like, here's kind of the core item, and then you can build it out. But, I talk with a lot of these companies, and it's like, our product is not, we have 20-minute phone calls. Those guys have 80-minute phone calls.
Right.
Like, trying to explain a backpack over the phone, it's tough.
No, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's personal.
You know what I would love to see out of the camo world? And when I say a layering system, I mean like a true layering system. So a lot of these guys, they're like, oh, but, how am I going to spend $500 for this and that and whatever, and then have, enough outfits for 10-day hunts or whatever.
Yeah.
But something that, the pants... You start out with the pants, they're good to a certain degrees, And then the first layer, base layer, that takes you to the next level. And then there's another base layer that goes over that.
Yeah.
Or, your next level of base layer, you put that next level of base layer, it takes you to that. And then if you want to go to the next level, you put on both base layers under those pants. And everything builds on it. I was working with a company a while back that was trying to develop something, and they came to me, and I basically it took you from those 85 degree weather to the zero.
And that's what I often say our system's the only true system, because everything is based off the performance of merino wool, which we believe is the best base layer possible. But all of our synthetics are based off of merino. They're designed to, borrow off the merino and enhance the merino in some degrees. But it's still, when somebody's like, yeah, I'm going on a sheep hunt, I want a whole system.
Right.
Like, cool. Get a t-shirt and a pair of boxers. Wear them for the next couple of months. Get an idea.
Yeah.
And then we'll go from there. Because it is amazing. And it drives me crazy. Like, I'll see folks wearing something with a cotton t-shirt underneath it takes, like, this jacket is kind of a hard jacket to explain to people, because it's a mid layer and can be a base layer and can be an outer layer, and so it like really takes a little bit of a leap of faith. And almost always people have over purchased.
Do you have a chart? Okay, from this degree to this degree, where this is and that. From this degree to this degree, where this is and that.
Yeah, we went through that exercise and started building that thing out.
Okay.
And we basically just got to this point where, like, how is this going to make sense to anybody? And then that same talk that we had, it's like, you're a 275-pound chicken farmer out of South Carolina.
Right.
And you are going to be on a moose hunt, sitting in a boat all day.
Yep.
Exposed to the elements.
Yeah.
You're actually going to be warmer than I am.
Yep.
At 160 pounds that time of year, sitting in the elements. So my kit's going to be substantially, I've had that talk on the mountain. Right. People will be like, oh, you're bringing a lot of stuff. Should I grab some? I'm like, no. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I'm going to need this stuff, right? Because I'm going to get up there an hour before you do and sit down and, got to layer up. So... and make that digestible.
Yeah.
And it's so much better to get somebody on the phone.
Yeah.
be like, tell me exactly what you're doing, where you're going, like,
and then have somebody build it out.
Yeah. I'm not saying it can't be done.
No, yeah.
And you know, Sitka made a pretty darn good attempt on their old website to do that. I looked at that a ton, but man, it's a cumbersome beast. And for a guy like me anyway, it's all of a sudden I'm spending way more time on the computer than I ever wanted to too. Yeah. You know? So I don't know.
It's funny. It's there. I've been with Sitka for a few years, and I actually did a review because people were always coming to me asking, what should I buy? What should I do? So I kind of did a review, and I kind of made a little chart. I'm like, well, this is what I do for me, for my body composition, for my activity level, and so on and so forth. And you know what, man? People come to my blog and read that thing all the time.
People really do, whether they admit it or not, they're much more comfortable being told, like, hey, this is what you need.
Yeah, because then the burden's not on you anymore.
Yeah, and, you know, for me, it's like, it does me absolutely no good to sell you something that is not going to perform for you.
Right, because then you're not going to help me sell it to your friends.
Yeah, and you're gonna, exactly. So
have a miserable time, you're going to say, this shit sucks, and I'm not gonna...
But it is funny, like, you know, Dallas Safari Club this year, guy's like, I'm going to go do this hunt, I want this, and he had printed out a sheet. He's like, this is what I'm thinking about buying. What do you think? And, man, I'd whittled that thing down by literally about $2,000.
Yeah. I'd say, and they're going to trust you more because you're like, somebody else would sold me everything. Yeah. So I could
You don't need
money.
Four of these. You need one of these. Right. You know? And you look at some of these outfitter lists out there, and you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. I'm like, but they're talking to the lowest common denominator. Because they have inevitably had horrible experiences where they have had to give somebody their sleeping bag, give somebody their jacket, because they're so ill-prepared.
Right.
And so this is their dummy-proof list. Yeah. Like, but if you're a responsible human being, like, I can whittle that down to this.
Right.
And you'll be totally comfortable, totally safe, and, you know, it's a...
Well, I respect that. Like I said, most companies would be like, no, you need this. You need more than that. Oh. You know?
Well, I don't own everything we make. So. I mean, not by a long shot. You know, and I have this really fun job at this point where, you know, we have, if you look at it on the nuts and bolts, we have 53 new styles for 2018. So I get all those. And I didn't understand this piece at all. Didn't know why we were making it. I just wanted my frickin' puffy pants, right?
Right.
And so when I got this, I wore it 42 days straight. I'm like, all right. You gotta commit it, right? Gotta commit, learn this thing. And that's what I try to do with all this stuff. But then by November, you know, out of 53 new pieces, I'll have six.
You know, find what you need and what works for you.
Yeah. Exactly. Sure. Yeah.
Well, cool. I thank you for taking the time, and I'd definitely like to have you on again.
Well, yeah, do you have your card on you?
I don't know if I do or not.
That's got my cell on there. And my
awesome.
Cell and email and all that good stuff. So.
Well, good deal.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, guys. If you like the podcast, if you like listening to what I do and like listening to the guests that I have on and the information that they give you, I urge you to go leave a review on iTunes. It helps me keep the podcast free, and it helps me grow the podcast.